Welcome back to the I'm Moving to Italy podcast. This is Nathan Heinrich, and I would like to welcome you back to Season 5, Episode 12. I want to thank those of you, and many of you, have reached out to me and asked me if I have been affected or my Italian family here has been affected by the floods in northern Italy. And while I'm really grateful to say that the floods have not impacted the area here where we are, in the Prosecco Hills, in the Prosecco Valley, in Conegliano. We are the lucky ones because just not far from here, 50 miles south of the city of Bologna, in the Emilia-Romagna region, there is currently historic flooding happening. I don't know if you've been following it or not. If you haven't, I can tell you that it is what they're calling a once-in-a-century flood. And what's happened, basically, is that we have had several years of historic drought. If you've ever tried to water a really dry potted plant, for example, do you notice that when you try to water that potted plant, the water just tends to run over the top of the root ball and run out the bottom of the plant or kind of overflow, but it doesn't really absorb into the plant root ball itself initially, when it's really, really dry. And that's basically what is happening here in northern Italy. The ground from several years of severe drought is parched and dry, which means that it's not able to absorb the water very quickly. And so what you had was several years of drought. So the rivers and everything and the canals, everything was low and everything was dry. The soil was dry. There's been very little rain in that particular region of Italy. And then all of a sudden, there was almost 10 straight days of rain that hit that area. And it was a lot of rain all at once. And the ground simply didn't have enough time to carry it away. The rivers didn't have enough time to keep up with draining everything out to sea. And so many, many rivers, I believe it's about 20 different rivers, as well as all of the canal system in that area, they've been overwhelmed with water and they've flooded. And this is the second time in a month that this has happened to this particular area. It's stuff like this that just makes me even more careful about where I choose to buy a property here in Italy. I just watched today that Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, who was in Japan for a G7 summit in Japan, she left early to come back and visit the cities that have been affected. And she was there covered in mud, just like all the residents, and wearing boots, and she was wet and giving people hugs and standing on balconies and talking to local people and doing what I think a really kind of what the job of a leader of a country is. And of course, you know, we want you to be representing us on the world stage as a leader, but also the fact that she left early to come back to see her people and to go there herself and to get dirty and covered in mud and to put her arms around people. There are a lot of people that don't like her, and I'm sure there are plenty of valid reasons not to like her, but I have to say that she's doing the right thing. What you're supposed to do when you're the leader of a country and you're basically all members of a big family when you're in a country, or at least that's the way it should be. Maybe that's the way it is because families are kind of dysfunctional and countries are dysfunctional. But she was there and she was doing the right thing. And I have to commend her for being there and just showing up for the people. And you could tell that the people were just so happy that she had come to be with them. And it's just devastating. The cities are not just filled with water, they're filled with mud and silt from the river. This sort of dusty, loose soil that's in the surrounding areas, and especially in this agricultural region, all that soil has been sort of just eroded away, and it has just been swept through these towns and into people's homes and businesses, and people have lost power. They're not able to get food. They're not able to get back home. Everything in their homes is destroyed. And it's just a terrible, terrible disaster. And it's not that this has never happened in this area. It just hasn't happened in so, so long. And, you know, climate change is happening all over the world. I mean, I remember growing up in California, there were a lot of storms in California. We would get fog in California growing up, and these crazy massive storms would blow through with these big black clouds. And then that sort of changed. You know, weather patterns are shifting and changing around the world. Italy seems to be getting hit extra hard. And it's so tragic to see this happening to Italy. If you're listening to this months or years after it's recorded, then this is the historic flooding that happened in May of 2023. And it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. About 14 people have passed away from the flood, and many of them were older people because they weren't able to get away. They weren't able to move. And of course, as you know, Italy is a country with a very older population. And when you have a huge flood burst in, especially at night, and you're not prepared for it, and there were just drownings that happened. So it hasn't been in the hundreds or the thousands of deaths, but it has been 14 people that have passed away. I want to play for you just a few clips of what's been going on here in the area, just some news reports, just so you can hear it directly from people on the ground, journalists on the ground reporting about this. And then I'll be back in just a minute, but I just thought I would share this with you so you can hear it, just in case you haven't had a chance to keep up with what's been going on. So here are a few clips for you.
At least 13 deaths have been confirmed in northern Italy's worst flooding in a century. Rescue efforts are underway in the worst affected regions, where an unknown number of people are feared trapped. Authorities are still trying to assess the full scope of the devastation. The rain is less intense now, but the floodwaters show little sign of receding. DW correspondent Sonia Farnikamp got a first-hand look at the situation.
Si apriamo la porta.
A doorway to danger. The cellar is submerged. I've never seen anything like it in my whole life. Massimo Salvador hasn't been himself ever since water levels began rising this afternoon in his village of Lugo in Italy's northern flood-hit Emilia-Romagna region. Within hours, water had consumed the ground floor and submerged his neighbor Mirko's kitchen. Outside, the rain has stopped, but torrential overflows from swollen rivers and canals continue to gush into villages in the region, wreaking havoc and putting a strain on emergency services. Salvador, a mechanic who lives on a safer upper floor, says he's tried in vain to contact the fire service for help, but he isn't bitter. Right now, the focus is rightly on rescuing people from houses. It's only later that they'll worry about pumping out the water. The floods have also sparked an outpouring of help as teams of volunteers try to fill the gaps. Eduardo, along with his friends, has been on his feet since 5 in the morning, helping with evacuation and rescue operations. He's from the area and isn't sure what has happened to his own home. I've been helping manage traffic, helping with places in the countryside where water has risen to half a meter. It's the fourth or fifth time that I've had to change my clothes today. I don't have fresh socks left. I'm now practically out of clothes. The dire situation in Lugo has also drawn extra professional hands from other parts of the country. The situation is quite desperate now. The whole region of Emilia-Romagna is suffering from something that's really quite unimaginable. The resources are what they are, but we try to do what we can with what we have. For residents like Valentina Caroli, the help is hugely welcome. She was woken this morning by a knock on the door of her ground floor apartment by the police and evacuated in a rubber boat. She's now waiting with her family to be taken by the emergency services to her parents. I hope to return soon, but I don't know when. We live in the ground floor. All the wood is damaged. So is the kitchen. I just hope it's not too long. Getting residents to safety is the priority in Italy's flood-torn region. Everything else can wait.
And we can now speak to journalist Silvia Boccardi, who is in Milan. Silvia, how are the rescue operations going? Are emergency services actually managing to reach the remote areas?
Hi. Well, we know that there are entire areas that are completely cut out, isolated from everything by power blackouts, by lines, phone lines that are down, by trains that are not working. So this is like worrying mainly the operation. But we know also that people are being saved. We have seen videos of people actually on top of the roofs who are being saved by dinghies, of elderly people that are being carried out on the shoulders of rescuers. So rescue operations are going fast, they're going well, but at the same time we know that there are more areas that that should be saved at the moment. Especially, I was talking yesterday with some people that are lucky enough to be on top of a hill, and they could see around that literally everything around them was submerged.
Now, what else can you tell us about the sheer scale of the damage so far?
Well, it's very early to know something about the scale of the damage, but there was an initial damage estimate for Bologna, the metropolitan area alone, and we're talking about 110 million euros just for roads, so not counting landslides, not counting the damage to private individuals and private goods. So the figure is bound to rise enormously, and it's really, really serious. Banks have started allocating hundreds of millions for emergency, and the government as well is going to meet up on Tuesday for an emergency meeting to give more money for the emergency. But I mean, we have to see if this is going to be enough. Mm.
So what about the cleanup efforts? How long will that take?
Again, it's very early to say. Romagna is completely submerged at the moment, and he's clinging to every possible anchor not to sink. There are thousands of volunteers who are trying to help. We have inflatable boats, helicopters, firefighters. But we still really need to see what next Tuesday meeting is gonna say. They will have measure passed in order to have more rescue operation put in place.
The journalist Silvia Boccardi there speaking from Milan. Thank you very much, Silvia.
Thank you.
So that's just a little bit of what's been going on in Emilia Romagna, and yeah, it's pretty devastating. And the reporter said there were some people who were on a hill, and they were able to look around them. And I may have mentioned this before, as I'm on a property search right now, I really do want to make sure I find an area that is not prone to natural disasters. You can't ever be sure when a natural disaster is going to happen. Fires and earthquakes and floods, they just tend to happen. Storms, they happen, and mudslides can happen, and you just have to be prepared for them. But you can still choose areas that are more or less prone than others. So anyway, just keep that in mind as you're hunting for property here in Italy. I know many of you are doing that. Just keep that in mind. Don't just think about earthquakes. Think about flooding as well when you think about purchasing an area. And maybe you would maybe just want to check and see what the elevation of the city is. And maybe if you find a city you like, just find a spot that's a little higher up in a hill. And so anyway, just something to keep in mind. And I want to give you an update on what's going on. And thank you to those of you who have reached out. I really, really appreciate you reaching out just to make sure everything's okay. Yes, I'm up here in one of the farthest northern areas you can possibly get. And like I said, we're at kind of a higher elevation than some of the other parts of Italy. So anyway, just send your prayers and your thoughts to our Italian brothers and sisters who are struggling so much. I'm just sending so much love to them. We've actually been getting some local floods here, but not When I say here, I mean kind of nearby in the city of Venice. Now, Venice, as you know, has been prone to flooding for centuries because of the fact that it is literally built on a lagoon, the most absurd place to build a city. If you've ever visited Venice, you know what a fantastic and beautiful city it is, but it's still kind of an absurd concept. But it's been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it survived. And with the droughts that have been happening here in northern Italy for the past 2 years, I mean, the local lakes are at a 70-year low level. And the canal basically is like a river that's been kind of turned into a canal that runs through our local city of Conegliano here. That has gone nearly dry. The longest river in Italy, the Po River, has almost dried up completely. Now, recently we did get some rain, and that helped quite a bit, but the problem is we're not getting the snow in the mountains. The snow in the mountains is what makes such a big difference, and it kind of provides water for northern Italy, and that just hasn't been happening over the past few years. So the rivers that usually drain into the lagoon where Venice is located, they sort of help to bring the water level in Venice up, because there's constantly an inflow of water coming from the rivers. Well, that has not been happening. And so some of the canals have recently dried up. In the past month, they were kind of dried up in Venice. Well, now that we've gotten some rain, now Venice is flooding again. That's the update on what's been going on. And I just wanted to give you a quick update. Thank you to those of you who have reached out, and I really appreciate you. Some of you have reached out and asked me about if I've made any progress on searching for properties, and I'm not sure if I've given you much of an update. There's not much of an update to really give you, but I did want to share something with you, and I'm doing my best just to focus on my work, wait for Alessandro to get here. We'll go look at properties together when he finally gets here, when he finally gets his travel waiver. Then he'll get here, we'll go look at some properties. Something that did happen in the past week that I kind of got excited about, I've got a list of properties that I want to go see. And some of the properties I went and saw last time, I've kind of come to the realization that some of those are not very practical. They present some challenges that make them just sort of impractical or extraordinarily cost prohibitive to renovate. And so I've kind of ruled out some of those properties that I saw last time that I went and visited, and I shared that visit with you when I was down in Rome earlier this year. Well, one of the properties that I've been watching that was kind of on my list of saved properties that I would like to see, when I translated the listing into English, and usually I actually don't translate into English, but this one was particularly long and I wanted to make sure I didn't misunderstand anything. So I translated it to English. And, you know, it said how big the size of the property was. The property was about 1 acre or so in size. And so I was just like, okay, or maybe it was 1 hectare in size, which is approximately 2.5 acres. Anyway, I wanted more land than that. I've been wanting something that's at least 10 acres or more. And so I kind of looked at it and I was like, all right, that looks interesting, but it's just too small. Well, then I recently saw that same piece of property listed again, but I saw it listed on the actual real estate company's website. And so I was reading through the listing in Italian. And what I noticed was that when you translate certain numbers like meters squared or hectares, if you don't look very carefully at the translation, sometimes the translation gets messed up. And this one property that I thought was only about 1 or 2 acres in size actually is 30 acres in size. And so now I'm really, really excited about that little farm. It's got 2 farmhouses on it. It's got walnuts. It's got grapes. It's got olives. So it has all these trees on it. It has a stream. It has a well. It has a spring. It's got a hill. It's positioned in a really great area. And so now I'm like, I can't stop thinking about it. I talk to Alessandro about it every day. I'm like, man, have I found our farm finally? And the price just dropped on this piece of property. And it's not something that anybody seems like very interested in. I don't know why. Maybe there are good reasons why other people aren't interested. It's also in an area that's not touristy. It's not on a lot of people's radar, which is something I've been really excited about. And so anyway, I'm just getting so excited to go look at that property when Alessandro comes to visit. He should be here within the next month. And when he does come, him and I will sit down and have another conversation that I'm going to share with you. And we're going to talk about the fact that we've basically been apart now for 6 months. It's been so crazy. Some days I feel like I'm literally losing my mind. And then other days I feel very grateful for the fact that I've been able to kind of focus on my health and my diet and my work without distraction. But honestly, I'd rather have him around and have that distraction than not. But anyway, you know all about that. I've shared all of that with you. So that's kind of my update this week about the flooding and about that potential piece of property that I'm starting to get excited about again. I have this horrible tendency, even though I try so hard not to, I have this tendency of getting excited about things even when I shouldn't, because you're opening yourself up for some serious disappointment and a serious letdown when you allow yourself to get too excited about something. But then when you finally go and see the property, then you realize all the problems and it would be too much. But anyway, I don't know. Something about this one feels different. So this might be it. I'll let you know when I know more. All right. Well, Veta has a fantastic segment for us today. So let's get right into her segment. Here is Veta Sarzano with La Vera Italia. Ciao, Vera. Welcome back to another segment of La Vera Italia.
Ciao Nathan, e buona domenica.
Well, guess what, Vera?
What?
In 7 days, we get to have our reunion, finally.
Yay!
Actually, I'm not even sure it's considered a reunion because it's not a reunion is like something that you're reuniting. We've never united in the first place. So what should we call it?
Well, we're gonna meet for the first time, so I'm gonna shake your hand and say, oh, nice to meet you. Piacere di conoscerla, signor
Aren't
Ein.
you? No. No, it's not going to be like that because you know what? Meeting someone for the first time, you're like you don't know that person, but I know you. So this is not even meeting for the first time. I have never had an experience like this before.
No, because that's 2023. It never happened before that people talked on Zoom or whatever for years without ever meeting. So that's a first. I think we need to come up with new words, both in English and Italian, for people who meet in person for the first time after years of talking together.
You know the Germans are going to come up with those words first.
We gotta beat them.
You know, hey, nobody should be able to do a better job than you, Vada. Like, you are one of the top Italian translators that translates whole entire books into Italian. So, I mean, come on. If anybody can do it, it's you.
Right now, you want me to do
No,
this?
no, no, no.
Ah.
I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm just saying we'll work on it. We'll work on it. No, but it's going to be I'm just so looking forward to it. And before we started recording, we started talking about some of our plans, what we wanted to do while you were here. What do you want to do when you've never been to the Prosecco Valley before, right? You've never been here before.
No.
What do you want to do? What are your top three things you want to do when you come here? Do you have any idea or do you just want to hang out?
No, just hang out, of course. Spending time with you, I don't care. No, I'm actually a very weird tourist, and so is my husband. When we travel, we never do much research beforehand. We just go there, drive around, walk around, whatever, and see things. So actually, no, I don't have any plans. I'm going to Udine before coming to Conegliano, another city where I've never been before. And I have no idea how it's gonna be. I haven't searched on Google or anything, just wanna get there and have a look around.
Okay, you know what's so interesting? That is exactly how I am. And I think I haven't decided yet whether that makes me a really bad tourist or maybe the best kind of tourist. I don't know, because when you go to an area and of course you know something about it, because you know that there's wine here, You know that there's Prosecco here. So you already know that. And usually when we go to visit an area, we know something about it, but I do the exact same thing. I do not do this, what so many of the good tourists do. They make a list. They've done all their research. They've read every article. They've saved things. They've got a whole like agenda. And that's not how I am when I travel at all. I love to be pleasantly surprised by things.
Yeah, me neither. And especially when I travel abroad, what I really like is to skip museums, skip all the sightseeing, because I mean, I love art, obviously, but museums are pretty much the same everywhere. I know there are different pieces of art, obviously, but you're in London and most of the things there are not British. So I can go to Florence because it's right here. So I just walk around and I never skip supermarkets. That's something I love doing because it tells you so much about the place where you are, seeing the stuff they sell and see how people shop there. So that's something I really love. And weekly markets, flower markets, whatever, flea markets, all these tiny things, and go to neighborhoods where there are no tourists and just see how people live. We go to parks usually to just see how people hang out and spend their time. And I think that's how I get to know a place instead of what it's there.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be so curious to hear your perspective on this area as an Italian and also as a Northern Italian. So it's going to be really interesting to hear your perspective on this area. You're coming on a Sunday, so you're coming next Sunday. We haven't decided yet whether we're going to actually sit down with a microphone while you're here. I almost don't want to do it because we've got it perfected so well doing interviews this way. And I feel like I don't want to turn any of our time together into work.
This is not work. We're going to have fun.
I know, but I'm saying I don't want to turn it into work because if we start recording, then it's going to feel like work. Whereas grabbing like taking video though and catching surrounding sounds together, now that we can do, and that won't feel like work to me. Anyway, we're going to play it by ear. But anyway, I've got a whole, you might not have a list of things you want to see when you get here, but I do have a whole list of places we can go. So we'll just kind of play that by ear. It's going to be so nice to meet you and Luca and in person, because I've met you both many times online. But anyway, so we're counting the days. We're 7 days out from our first official hangout. That's going to be so great. Okay. I've stalled long enough, as you always accuse me of doing. what sort of Italian question do you have in store for me today, Vera?
Che cosa significa il tuo nome e perché i tuoi genitori l'hanno scelto?
Okay, I think I got most of that. Let's hear it again a little bit slower.
Che cosa significa il tuo nome e perché i tuoi genitori l'hanno scelto?
Okay, so what does my name mean and why did my parents choose that name for me?
Yes, that's exactly what I asked.
Okay, well, that was an easy one. Okay, I'm almost embarrassed to say what my name means, but I'm going to go ahead and just say it. It's actually a Jewish name or Hebrew name, and it means gift of God.
Why are you embarrassed?
Because it just sounds presumptuous. Anyway, so that's what my name means. I have absolutely no idea why they chose that name, but I'm glad that they did because I actually really like my name.
Good.
You know how you hear a lot of people say, "Oh, I hate my name." I've never hated my name. I've always liked my name. So it's not the most common name. So I kind of like that too, that it's not the most common. But anyway, so that's the answer. Now let's see if I can say that in Italian. Non lo so perché i miei genitori hanno scelto,
mm-hmm.
scelto il nome Nathan. So non se per no. So Non so perché i miei genitori hanno scelto il nome Nathan.
Yeah, in English, your answer was way longer than this.
Okay, and then I'll just say, let's see if I can say the meaning of the word, the meaning of the name, and then we'll just leave it at that, okay? All right, and then how would I say the meaning of my name? Okay, I think I would say il significato del nome Nathan è regalo di Dio.
Sì, molto bene.
Ok, il significato del nome Nathan è regalo di Dio.
Bello, molto bello.
Ok, grazie. E tu, Vera, il suo nome?
Anche a me piace tantissimo il mio nome. Sono contentissima di chiamarmi Vera e non lo cambierei per nulla al mondo. So I'm one of the few lucky, people in the world. Love their name. I love Vera. I really like it a lot because I think I met like three or four Vera in my life, especially Italian ones. I think one or two here in Tuscany. In the north, it's not that common, so I'm actually only one. And also, my last name is not very common in Italy, so I'm one of a kind.
You are.
So the name is Russian in origin, or anyway from the east. You have a lot of Vera in Poland, Czech Republic, and these sort of countries. But my parents were actually looking for a short name because they don't like names being shortened into something else and change. So they were looking for a short name, and they liked Sara a lot. But then my last name is Sarzano, so didn't sound right. And then they met this travel agent, I think, from Hungary, and her name was Vera. And they were like, wow, we love it.
Can you hear that? Let's try that last part again. About start over about the part about whatever you want about Vera.
Whatever I want. Did you say?
Making me laugh so hard today. Whatever I want. Never mind. I'll tell you where to start.
Understand why you're laughing.
Because that response, the look on your face, and the way you asked me, whatever I want.
Was that too Italian for you? I thought you married an Italian and you live in Italy, so by now you should be used to this.
All right, let's try that
No. I won't talk about my name because I hate it right now.
All I said was start over from the part about Veda again, wherever you want.
I thought you were like telling me where to start, and I was like, I never said whatever I want in my part, so where do you want me to start? Anyway,
Okay.
from the
No, not from the beginning.
beginning. No, So actually, my parents were looking for a very short name and they liked Sara, but my last name is Sarzano, so you see, that didn't sound right. And they didn't even know if I was going to be a boy or a girl, so they were still thinking about it. And then I met this travel agent from Hungary, and her name was Vera, and they simply loved it. And they went like, okay, if it's a girl, we're going to name her Vera. And here I am. Now, the name originally means in Russian, faith. Okay, so that's the meaning. But in Italian, that's the funny thing. Vera means true in the feminine singular form. Okay, so Vera is just true. But it's also something else. It's a noun. So la Vera, it's your wedding ring. It's
Really?
Yeah, it's a special name for the wedding ring. You can call it fede, which is Italian for faith, or la vera.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So you see, even with my name, I teach you Italian.
That's so great. What a cool name. Well, I've told you this before. I love the name too because it was my great grandmother's name and I loved her very much. She was fantastic. But also, and I was going to say this earlier, but I just decided don't give too much information. But if I had been born a girl, I would have been named Sarah.
All right.
So what does that tell you? Like that was a popular name at the time, right? Well, that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. And that was a great question. And I'm so glad to hear we both love our names. That's kind of nice, isn't it?
It is. I really love it, and I haven't met many people who do.
Right. It seems like somebody's always complaining about their name. Oh, yeah. My parents named me that, but I don't really like it. That would be horrible to not like your name. I don't know what that would feel like.
Yeah.
Sorry to all you people listening to this, but we love our names. And if you don't, sorry. Okay, moving on. Vera, you have a fantastic segment prepared for us as usual. And would you like to take a quick moment? I know you mentioned that you'd like to take a quick moment and thank those people who have recently been buying you coffee, which has been so lovely to hear about.
Yeah, not only for the coffee, but because they reach out and they tell me why they love what I do. And I'm so grateful because, we're here. I'm seeing you on my screen and talking in a microphone. And I have my videos on Instagram. And I never think of all the people who actually watch those or listen to us. And I feel like kind of a star right now, and everybody knew about my upcoming trip to Conegliano, and everybody's saying how much they love it and what they do. And so thank you to all my your listeners, my followers, all the people who love what we do, because it really means a lot to us, and that's what keep us going, right?
Absolutely. And for me, I'm with you. I kind of feel the same way. It's hard for me to think about all the people. So I never think about all the people. What I always do is whenever I'm talking, I've got this microphone in front of me, I don't feel like I'm just staring at a computer screen. And I also don't feel like I'm talking to an enormous crowd of people. I'm always talking to you. Right now, the person that's listening, you, is that's who I'm talking to. I'm never talking to anyone other than you. And it's very likely that I know you because we've probably talked on Instagram or emailed or somehow we've been in communication on Facebook or something. And so that's what's so nice about getting that kind of direct contact and getting those people reaching out and saying, we appreciate you and we're going to buy you a coffee to thank you for it. So I'm so glad that people are doing that. Don't forget, you can go to kikelanguage.com and buy Vera a coffee to thank her for her incredible input and all that she shares on this segment every week with us.
Grazie mille, io lo prendo macchiato freddo.
Fantastico. All right, Vera, take it away. What have you got to share with us today?
Well, I would like to talk to you about how different things are in Italy. And I mean, you already know this, but I mean big things. I mean time. I mean age. I mean distance. General concept that should be universal. They're not. Okay. Everything is relative, especially for us compared to the United States, for example, or Northern Europe. And yeah, I just realized that by spending more and more time with foreigners, not only for my job, but even here, I live in Tuscany, so I'm surrounded by tourists from all over the world and they ask questions. And I don't know how to reply to them. And I realized that maybe I'm honest. I say what I would say to an Italian, but they misunderstand it because we have different concepts, different ideas. So let's start by the easiest one, for example. How far is it? Is it far away to go to Florence from here? That's a question I've been asked several times. by strangers, by tourists here, and so on. So like, oh, we are in Siena. Is Florence far? Okay. My first instinct is to say, yes, it's far. It's 1 hour drive. So start to see the problem here. What does far mean? So my first tip for you today is when you're here or when you're talking to an Italian, even a travel agent or, you know, your future tour guide for the first time you get to Italy, don't ask questions like, is it far or is it near? They make no sense. Ask, how far is it? And just demand they tell you how far, like in kilometers or miles, even better for you, right? But still, have a number, not just, yes, it's far, no, it's not that far, because we are different. Now, Italy is a relatively small country. Here in Europe is the same size as Poland. And South America and Central America is about the size of Ecuador. And for the United States, we said this already, it's about the size of Arizona. Mm-hmm. Or New Mexico, it's in between Arizona and New Mexico. And yeah, so it's, we are a very small country, and you would think, oh, great, so Italians have visited every single city in their country and every single place because everything is so close, right? False. I mean, for us, a 3 hour drive is a very long trip. It's considered far. While, you know, I have friends or people I know coming all the way from Australia. Mm-hmm, obviously, their neighbor is 3 hour drive from their home. So basically, when you're here, they're like, okay, so we are up in Turin for 5 days, then we go to Bari in Puglia for 5 days, and then we go to Florence. And I'm like, that's crazy what you're doing, see, because we have different ideas. And so we live in a small country, and when everything is small, you have like the first supermarket is 1 minute walk. Or, I don't know, the closest train station is 5 minutes ride. The next village actually borders to your village. Everything is so compact here in Italy. So that's why 30 minutes seems a very long trip, because we don't need to do that every day, several times a day. I remember when I was in the States as an exchange student, and they drove me to school a few days before school started just to enroll and do everything. And we got in a car and we drove. And drove. And I'm like, I thought my host family was in the same town as my high school. And they were like, yes, we are. That's the closest high school here. And it was like 40 minutes drive. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. From Como, if I drive for 40 minutes, I'm halfway in, I'm in Switzerland, halfway towards the German-speaking part, not only the Italian-speaking part. So you see how things are different. And every single town here, every single village in Italy has Roman or medieval origins. And they were, at least until a few decades ago, self-sufficient. So every single town, every single village has a city center with a square where you have your weekly market and the pharmacy and the post office and the bank. So we are not used to travel to get things done, right? So that's why everything that is further away sort of scares us. And finally, we talked about this when we talked about families in Italy. We don't move. We live in the very same village or just next to it as our parents, relatives and grandparents and whatever, the same friends we went to school with still live in the same area. So we don't need to travel. Everything we care, we need, and everyone we care about is right here where we need it. So that's why you shouldn't ask, is it far? Obviously, when I travel, especially when I'm abroad, I'm more than willing to drive another 3 hours from the place where I'm staying to see a city or a castle or whatever, because that's sort of once in a lifetime experience. But when you surprise us here with a question like, is it far? We just, you know, it's our instinct to just tell you, yes, it's far. But for you, it's not. You're on holiday, first of all, so you have more time. And it's not far for you because you come from a country maybe where everything is further away. And also, it's worth it for you because maybe you're not coming back to Italy anytime soon or ever. So just ask kilometers, miles, whatever. And I know we have Google Maps today, but don't be fooled. Now I'm going on a sidetrack for a moment. When you take the A1 highway in Italy that goes all the way from Milan to Naples, and you exit in Florence, you can then get to Siena. So that's how you get to Siena. Okay, you exit in Florence, and there are two roads that lead you to Siena. One is shorter and one is longer. Every single GPS sends you on the shortest road, obviously, but that is called the Chiantigiana. It's a tiny, tiny, winding road, all turns and curves, up and down the hills, all the way from Florence to Siena. And you don't drive like we do, fast and reckless, so it will take more than 2 hours for you to drive from Florence to Siena, while the other one is less than an hour drive. So once again, we have technology helping us, but double check. Remember to always double check because roads are different in Italy. So ask people, but also double check on apps, both time and kilometers. So that's my tip for your next trip to Italy. Mm-hmm. So do you think that distance is a different concept here in Italy?
Definitely. For basically the reason that you've described, I would say it's certainly different in the idea of traveling anywhere in Italy. A lot of Italians are very, very much, a vacation is like an act of God to try to get them to like sign up for a vacation. And some people, vacations are like a thing of the past for them at a certain age. Like they would never dream of going and seeing even their family that lives in another region, like they're just done. They might talk on the phone, but visits are over because it's just, it seems like a big deal. And maybe it's because it's a big expense too. I don't know what the real reason is. I haven't decided. I think maybe that's what, and maybe you're going to get into this, but I think my question for you would be why, and you've already answered part of it, but the other part of it would be like, I don't understand why Alessandra's grandmother, who grew up with 9 siblings, why she wouldn't want to visit her siblings when she's in good enough health. Now she's not really. But before, you know, when her husband was still alive and they were okay, like the idea of going to visit her living siblings was just completely out of the question. It would be like driving from one end of Arizona to the other.
I know, but a trip from Conegliano, so from Veneto all the way down to Naples, I guess, or Sicily, where her siblings are, it's a lot. It's a lot. We don't spend much time in the car. We're not used to it. We get tired. We get bored. And, you know, especially people that are not so young anymore, they need to walk. They need to stand up. And especially older generations, they spend their whole home life sacrificing for things and working hard in the field. And it's like, okay, I had to leave my family or whatever behind. I moved to another region to find work, not like we do today just for fun, but because they really needed to escape poverty or whatever. And it's like, okay, I'm done. This is like a jail sentence, a life sentence. I'm away now and it's done. I know it's weird. It's just that we own our own habits and we rarely change them. So once one is away, then it's very difficult to go back. And I don't know, my grandparents, actually, they were already retired. I think it was 20 years ago now, but they were in, well in their 60s, they went to Australia to visit my great aunt who moved there after World War II. And it was a big deal because they couldn't speak any English, of course, and they, you know, flew all the way there. And they were really happy. But once again, yeah, not the average family, but I totally understand what you say. And then we say lontano dagli occhi, lontano dal cuore, far from the eyes, far from the heart.
Uh-huh. Do you know what our English saying is for that?
Uh-huh.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Mind. Uh-huh. You see, we talk about heart. We are more romantic than you are.
Yep. How warm are the Italians compared to everybody else?
And also, don't forget that when Alessandro's grandmother moved from Naples all the way to Veneto, there were probably no phones in at home. I mean, you had to go to the cafe and use a public phone. And then even where there were phones, making phone calls from one zip code to the other was really expensive. While you can talk to your family whenever you want, you can even see them. Mm-hmm. FaceTime and Zoom calls. So that helps keeping the relationship.
That's very true. And you're right. That was the move that they made, that she made just in the last 15 years to come to Veneto. But before that, it was Sicily to Naples.
Mm-hmm.
And Sicily and Naples are not that far apart from each other either, but one's an island. And to get there, you got to get on a boat. And that seemed like that's such a big deal. I don't know how many times she went back, but I don't think it was that many.
Probably not.
Anyway, it's just interesting. Okay. So I don't want to sidetrack you from here, guys. I know you've got plenty of more things to talk about. It's easy for us to get sidetracked. Well, for me to sidetrack you, I should say.
No, I can be sidetracked. So weather. We were talking about fashion last week. And we already established that, especially in spring and fall, Italians wear warmer clothes compared to foreign tourists. But it's not only that, it's not just how we feel, like I feel cold and you don't, maybe, but it's because sometimes I've seen, well, not sometimes, actually every year, I see tourists freezing here in Tuscany in April because they're like, but it's Italy. We thought it was going to be hot and sunshine. And I'm like, yeah, but it's April. So you have to double check. Italy is not always sunshine and always, we're not on the equator. I mean, we are in the Mediterranean Sea. It's not that cold, but it is cold. And it's kind of weird because I moved, and you know that, from Lake Como, so the northern part of Italy, to Tuscany 15 years ago. And I thought, okay, we are moving south and we're going to have milder winters. And yeah, I knew about summers. And of course, I had been here several times. I was freezing. My first winters here were like, how is that even possible? I moved 300 kilometers south and here I am freezing cold. Well, first of all, I realized that here they keep their houses colder compared to the north. So I didn't have the right clothes. Mm-hmm. My sweaters were not warm enough. And also, same temperature in Milan or in Siena hit different because of the wind, the humidity level, whatever, you know, the temperature you feel is different. And I remember that I used to work in a winery back then when I first moved here. And the owner, the winemaker, she couldn't speak any English, so I translated for her and did tours for her. And when tourists ask, oh, so how's the weather here? Is it very cold? Does it get very cold in winter? Is it good for the grapes? And she was like, no, our winters are so mild and that's amazing and the grapes love it. And I was wearing three coats and a scarf and freezing. And I was like, well, I'm not translating this. Are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? It's way warmer up in Milan. And now, okay, fast forward to 15 years later, when I go visit my family for Christmas, I'm freezing cold there And I feel just fine here in Tuscany. I got used to it because it's different. Here, it's more windy, so you have the wind that kind of, blasts. So at first I felt cold, but it was actually not that cold. While in the north, you have more humidity, like this fog that gets into your bones, You kind of feel wet inside. But the wind is also bad, so I wasn't used to the wind. So my ears and my nose and my fingertips were just freezing. They were blue, while up in the north, I felt just fine. And now it's the other way around. I'm like, I can't breathe because the air is so stiff. And I'm cold inside. What's going on? So even if you come from Canada, I don't know, from Minnesota, whatever, you might feel that it's really cold here because it's just a different kind of cold. For temperature, it's not colder than some areas in Canada, of course, but it hits different. And April and November and December can be very cold months, so you never know. Too, like we do, bring a sweater. And there's also this funny thing: Italians love the sun, obviously. Il paese del sole, o sole mio, right? So, an American friend of mine, I met her a few days ago, and she was like, "Can I ask you like a cultural thing?" I'm like, "Sure, go ahead, shoot." She was like, "Why is everyone complaining about the rain? I mean, not the big flood that we just had last week in Emilia-Romagna. Obviously, that was a bad thing. There were some victims." She was talking about the rain here in Tuscany in the past few weeks. And she was like, "Everyone is saying, oh, questa pioggia, oh, che stagione, mamma mia." And I'm like, "Yeah, because it's raining." And she's like, "Yeah, but isn't that a good thing for the trees and the plants? So we are not gonna, we're gonna have water next summer. We will be able to water our vegetable gardens, our flowers." I'm like, "Yeah, I totally agree. I love rain, but Italians don't. That's just it. And we love to complain in general, but we love to complain during summer because we don't have enough water, not only for swimming pools, vegetable gardens, and your flowers. You're not allowed to water the plants in most parts of Italy during the summer. But in some cities and towns, you don't have running water in your house when it gets really, really bad. Because the well, and there are no natural springs there, the wells are empty, so you just don't get water, and that's not a good thing, right? So we complain a lot about that, and yet, if in May it rains almost every day, but not all day long, for a few hours a day, every day for 21 days right now, because it's May 21st, people complain. They're like, "Oh, this is killing me. Oh, I can't." So once again, you want to learn something about Italy and how's the weather? Don't ask your Airbnb host or your hotel manager, is it cold? Does it rain a lot? Because 3 days of rain for Italians is, yes, it's raining a lot this year. So just ask for numbers once again. Try to have like scientific answers so that they are objective. And I remember a few years ago, I was in a cafe with my dad. We were getting a coffee, and the waitress was talking and chatting like we do in Italy in the piazza. And she could hear our accent was from the north, so she thought we were tourists, right? And she was like, "Oh, you will never believe it, but it rained so much this year. It was crazy. Like, it rained a lot this summer." But I was living here, so I was like, "Are you saying it rained a lot? When?" And she started thinking, and she was like, "Well, it rained. Yeah, I remember it rained the day that my sister got married, and that was it. That was all I could think about one day."
Wow. Well, I can definitely attest to the fact that Italians don't like rain, because guess who hates rain?
Alessandro?
Yes.
So there you go. That's our weather forecast for today. And in Italian, we have the same word, tempo, for both weather and time. So let's talk about time right now. From tempo to tempo. Compared to the US and other Northern European countries, we do things later. We wake up later, we go to bed later, we have lunch and dinner and everything later. So office working hours are 9 to 6. Okay. And that's pretty much everywhere. You say 9 to 5, but we have a lunch break, right? So that's why it's 9 to 6. Long lunch break. School for kids starts between 8 and 8:30, depending on the grade. We have lunch between 12:30 and 2, I would say 2:30, and dinner is between 7:30 and 9:30. That's when we start. Now let's talk about kids. Kids' bedtime in Italy is late. I mean, the earliest bedtime I had that I can remember when I was a child was 9:30. I mean, before that, when you're a newborn or a toddler, you don't even know what time it is. So your mom just puts you to bed. But still, I think that once you're past the sleeping 20 hours a day phase, it's 9:30. Kids have dinner with their parents and then they're put to bed. And for children, it's like 9:30, 10:30, 11, no problem, when they are in middle school, for example. So once again, saying early or late, it's not a good idea. Let's say you want to check out of your hotel room and you tell the receptionist, we want to do an early checkout tomorrow. And she'd be like, yeah, fine. Because usually people check out at 10 and you want to check out at 9. But by early, you meant 5 in the morning. You're not going to find anyone helping you at that time. So we really have a different idea. And especially in Northern Europe, and for some reason, even in the States, you have a lot of people saying dinner time is between 5:30 and 6 p.m. And then they go, I can't even believe that adults going to bed at 8 or 9. And I'm like, yeah, because I want to get my 8 hours of sleep. And I'm like, yeah. So sleep in the morning. Why do you wake up at 4? So everything is your way around. And same thing for restaurants or night out, or if you get an invitation. I have a lot of American acquaintances that at first they were shocked. It's like, oh, some Italians invited me to go grab a pizza or have dinner with them at the restaurant. I'm so excited. I was so excited until they told me meeting point 9 o'clock in front of the restaurant. And I was like, yeah, what's the problem? I'm already almost in bed by that. What do I do home until 9? And I'm like, your life, you finish working at 6, 6:30, 7, go home, take a shower, get ready. So you see, just very, very different. And time, of course, is related to your age. Now, nobody likes to get older, right? Not Italians, not French, not anyone in the world. We hate getting older and older. But I'm not talking about, plastic surgery or miracle treatments or things you can do to look young. That is something universal. I'm talking about the stages of life that in Italy are different. So we have newborns, neonati, bambini, so that's kind of children, ragazzo or ragazza, which is a teenager, young man, young girl. And then we have adults and we have adulti, and then we have anziani, so senior citizens. Perfect, right? You would say, yeah, that's the same thing for us. Well, it happens so often to read like newspaper titles like this. Una giovane mamma di 34 anni, So a very young 34-year-old mom. So yeah, a una ragazza di 38 anni. So ragazza is like teenager, girl. It's the word we use for teenagers, basically. It should be until you're 20, 21 maybe. No, 38. Obviously, I'm happy because I can still say I'm a girl, but, you know, I'm not. Or a young 45-year-old man. And things get even worse when we talk about jobs or, you know, titles like a young politician, 52. A very young doctor, 56. I'm like, that is not very young. But it is. Now, remember the whole staying home with your family and live with your parents until you get married. So obviously you don't grow. You're not on your own. You are with mama and papa that help you out with everything. And they still see you like a baby because you act like a baby because you live with them and you don't do your laundry, you don't do your grocery shopping, you don't do your cooking or cleaning or whatever. Maybe you might help sometimes, but still. And you're in their home, so their rules. You're still a teenager. As simple as that. So when you see someone, like when you see a 30-year-old Italian adult, think it's still a baby. Because in fact, it is. And I really need to say this. When I meet foreigners, it's very difficult for me to guess their age because they all seem much older to me. But then I really look at the face, the skin, you know, and I'm like, no, this person is probably 10 years younger than me. But the way they approach, the way they speak, you can tell there's more maturity behind it. And that's probably because they left the nest when they were supposed to, instead of staying with mama until their mid-30s. So, and it's a big problem. Like this friend of mine, Alessio, and his brother, Christian, they are gardeners. They started working at a very young age because they come from a family where work was really valued. And they started gardening, that's landscaping and gardening, that's their job. Of course, at first it was like a side job while they were still studying, they were still in school. But then when they were 18, they decided they didn't want to study and they wanted to work. So they start. And even they're tall and they're broad and they have muscles. So they're big, okay, big guys, and they're from Naples. So they're darker skinned. I was about to say boys, but it's actually men because they're in their early 30s. You see, I'm Italian too. Men with very thick, dark brown beards. Now, I'm telling you this because this is very important. He's a friend of mine, so we talk a lot. And he was like, I can't get my company started and it's not going as well as I hope because people say they won't hire me because I'm too young. And he was like 26, 27 when he was saying this thing. He used to work for a company and then he opened his own company, same thing. So they liked me when I had a boss. Now that I'm alone, they're like, you're too young to do this. But he was like, my work is tiring. You need young people to do this. He goes into the forest and cuts the trees and takes everything out. I mean, you need to be strong and healthy and young to do that kind of gardening. You know, that this is Tuscany, not your typical garden with the sprinklers. We're talking about going into the forest and keeping, you know, wild boars away. So it was like, I had people who are like 60, 65, 70, that they need someone young to help them, but they don't want me because I'm too young. But if they wait until I'm 50, then I'll be too old to do that. So you see the problem here. 27 is considered young to be a gardener. That's just crazy. And I got married when I was 29, but Luca and I had already moved to Tuscany 2 years before that. Well, 29, the youngest in my family, getting married. All my cousins and relatives got married way later, like in their 30, 35, and so on. And they were all saying, oh, you're so young, you're getting married so young. And that came from my aunts and, well, grandparents who got married when they were 21 or 22. So I'm like, I'm it's already late compared to you, but it's different. I don't know. They still think we are too young because my generation is the first one who got the chance to study all the way through university. So before that, it was maybe just one, like my mom stopped after high school while my dad graduated university. My aunt didn't. So you see, this, like my generation is born in the 70s and 80s. So millennials are the first generation who really kept studying all the way to university. And we finish university when we are around 25 or 26, because it's longer here. So that's another thing. Well, our parents and relatives see us as younger because we kept studying longer. But still, I was 27 when I moved out. And I mean, it's not when I moved to Tuscany, it's not that young. And still, everyone was like, oh, two kids moving all the way to Tuscany. And then, oh, getting married. You're so young. I can't believe you're getting married. Like, I'm 29 and my husband is 39. You see, this is crazy. And still today, probably because we don't have children, but we can hear our relatives saying something like, oh, yeah, the kids are coming for Christmas. We are the kids. Yeah. I don't want to get old, obviously. I'm not saying I'm old, and I don't realize it, and it's not in a good way. Like, oh, if you feel young, then you can age well. It's not that kind of feeling young that I'm talking about. Society makes us feel too young to do stuff, but we are not. And if you wait and do something with your life when you are way in your 40s, maybe it's too late, or maybe you don't have the strength to do something. And it's not only societies, even the government. So in Italy, we have crazy laws, you know that, especially for work. It's very complicated to be hired because once you're hired, then your boss cannot, so they're not allowed to fire you unless you do something really bad. So it's very complicated. So the government a few years ago came up with a new kind of contract. It's apprentice contract sort of thing for young workers that the employer could terminate. Okay, so they was were trying the government was trying to solve this problem of employers not being willing to hire people because otherwise they were stuck with the same people forever. But great, apprentice with a low salary, obviously, because you're young and you're learning. But that's good because you're young and you just ex make experience, so you gain some experience and then you can do whatever you want with it. Great. This contract is only for people aged 18 to 29. Not that young, right? And until you're 29, obviously employers won't hire you in a different way because that's more convenient for them, money-wise. And so up until you're 30, you're going to be an apprentice. See how bad that is for our society? We are old, like we feel young, we say we are young, but we are an old society. You have old people where it counts and even where it doesn't count. Like gardeners are old. Can you believe that? I mean, a work where you need to be strong. Not that you need to retire early, but still, there's no room for young people to do things. TV presenters, journalists, and politicians, everyone is so old here. And I think that's also one of the reasons why Italy is struggling more than other countries in Europe and in the world with this new economy, because old people don't like technology. They don't like new things, right? And they're not used to it. So even if they know how to use a computer, they still struggle, right? And it would be so much easier to have Gen Z or younger millennials build apps for our, you know, government cards and everything we need. While every time I try to log into my app for IMPS or for my healthcare and everything, there's a bug, there's something that doesn't work. And they're like, yeah, you can do everything on the app, but then you need to come here in person to sign it. Because all people, if I don't see you, the deal is not done.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's almost, we almost have the exact opposite problem in the United States, I think. We don't give enough value to older people. And I don't think you give enough value to younger people. Because we have so much emphasis on youth and energy and what things you can do when you're young, and you better hurry up and do it when you're young, and you're only valuable if you're young. But once you hit a certain age, you're pretty much like, we know that you are, you know, you're kind of over the hill and you're not going to be up to date with the latest technology. So, sorry. So I feel like neither one is the right way to go. There's some sort of a happy medium, some sort of a balance in the middle where you can value the youth and you can value the older people, because there's value at both end, both spectrums of the lifespan.
Yeah. Do you think such a country exists?
No.
Good.
Nope.
Anyway, if you want like a self-esteem boost, come to Italy, because everyone will tell you, oh, you're so young. Oh, you're so young. You're so young. So that's a good idea. Just move to Italy in your 40s or even 50s, and they'll be like, oh, you're so young.
That's excellent. Or when you move into Italy when you're in your 60s or 70s, they're going to be like, oh, you're in your prime.
Yeah.
That was fantastic, Vera. Thank you so much. And once again, you've enlightened us and told us things that we would never know without your expert Italian insight. So thank you.
Thank you for having me here. And ci vediamo. And this time we really see each other. Ci vediamo la settimana prossima. Ciao, ciao.
Esatto. Ciao, ciao, ciao. Thank you, Vera. That was fantastic. Don't forget, if you need an Italian language coach, Vera is the best. ChicheLanguage.com is where you go to visit, or you can visit imovingtoitaly.com, my website, and follow the links to Vera's website. Make sure you book Vera as soon as you can, because very soon she's not going to be available. She's getting so busy that it's getting harder and harder for us just to schedule time for us to have our segment together, the La Vera Italia segment. So, of course, you're not going to miss out completely, because in the future, she's going to have language learning programs of her own. And maybe by the time you listen to this, she'll have some of those online classes available so you can still learn from Vera. But I can tell you, as having her as my own personal Italian language coach, she is just fantastic. And there is nothing like having her as your personal one-on-one coach. So anyway, thank you, Vera. I appreciate you so much and this wonderful segment today. All right, that brings us to our surrounding sounds. And I want to quickly thank our sponsors, ExpressVPN and Babbel Language. You already know these are two of the most fantastic services, and definitely are going to need these if you are planning a trip or planning to move to Italy. So visit imovingtoitaly.com. You get 3 months for free when you sign up with a VPN from ExpressVPN using the links on my website at imovingtoitaly.com. Also Babbel Language, you get up to 50 or 60% off depending on what kind of promotion they're offering. But those links are also on my website, imovingtoitaly.com. So thank you to Babbel Language app, and thank you to ExpressVPN. I am so grateful for the fact that you are sponsoring us and the fact that I get to use your amazing services every single day here in Italy. Okay, so that brings us to our surrounding sounds. And what I want to share with you today is something that actually happened a few weeks ago. I've been kind of holding on to the surrounding sound, not for any other particular reason, the fact that I had so many of them that I kind of just, this one sort of got pushed down, but I wanted to share it with you anyway because it was something kind of historic that happened here in Italy. And of course, because Alessandro is from Naples, it's such a, you know, beloved city for him, and it's kind of a big deal what happened. So I'm no soccer or football fan or aficionado, and so I'm not really the best person to talk about what happened. But basically, it would be the equivalent of like the city of Naples winning the Super Bowl here in Italy. And what they won is called a Series A title. Now, I don't follow any team. I never have, because I'm from the United States and we just don't follow soccer, as we call it. And it's just not something we follow. I think that it's in the Olympics, the Summer Olympics, but we that's about the only time we really follow it in the United States. But the city of Naples, the team, the Napoli team, has not won this particular title since 1990. So it's been 33 years. And when the city won, and Alessandro warned me that they were going to be winning, and, you know, he's not a big fan of soccer or football either, but he, I guess it's also called calcio here. So, I don't know, there's like three names for this crazy sport: soccer, football, and calcio. It's like, I don't know, I don't even know. I hear people call it every one of those names here in Italy, and I don't understand anything about the game, because how can the game last for so many hours and nobody gets any points? I just find it to be the weirdest game, but Italians love it, and they love it. They're passionate about it, so who am I to judge? I don't get passionate about any sports team, but this is not really about what I do and don't get passionate about. This is what Italians get passionate about. So the people from Naples completely lost their mind with this win. They just went nuts. And so what I'm going to share with you is watching Italian TV the night that Naples won. So here is the sound of the city of Naples celebrating their Series A title that they won for the first time in 33 years. This is on Italian TV, so it's going to be reporters talking and crowds of people screaming behind them. So anyway, here are some of the sounds of Naples winning and their celebrations. So enjoy, and I'll be back afterwards to say goodbye.
Se lo ricorda la vittoria dell'altro scudetto? Era piccola?
Sì, ero piccola, me lo ricordo, certo, sì.
E che ricordo ne ha da bambina?
Beh, sì, è un po'... Infatti mi ha riportato alla mente, chiaramente. Però adesso è più importante per me, in questo momento storico, anche
per della sua vita.
E della mia vita, comunque.
Those were some happy people from Naples, weren't they? It really makes me want to go watch a soccer game here, and I've never done that. I know Vera recommended that in one of our segments this season. I've never gone to a soccer game here in Italy. I definitely want to do that. And I know that Vera's husband, Luca, is a big fan of soccer, so maybe I'll go with him and watch a soccer game sometime in the future. I'll be talking to him this week, so maybe I'll ask him about that. Well, anyway, my friends, thank you so much for coming back and sharing another episode with me. I am so grateful to have you here. Thank you for leaving a 5-star review on the podcast on whatever platform you happen to be listening on. It helps the show so much, and I just really appreciate you doing that. So thank you. Wherever you are listening to the sound of my voice today, I hope you are healthy and well, and I look forward to being back here with you next week for another episode. So until then, take care. God bless. Ciao, ciao, ciao.